there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on Vermont Edition. And I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Short and sweet, right to the good stuff. Thank you.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. If you're a regular listener of Vermont Public, you are probably familiar with this voice.
Here's the latest Eye on the Sky update. Showers and thunderstorms, most numerous from a Glens Falls, Fairhaven, Hanover, Mount Washington line northward, will gradually die down this evening.
That, of course, is meteorologist Steve Maleski. He's been sharing the forecast with Vermonters on our airwaves for more than 40 years. This summer, he's retiring and passing the forecasting wand to his colleagues, Mark Breed, Lawrence Hayes, and Megan Duncan. She is the first female meteorologist at the Fairbanks Museum and Planetarium in St. Johnsbury. She joined the Fairbanks in April, and she's going to be teaching classes on extreme weather, climate change, and maybe even a new class she's working on developing about rainbows. Steve and Megan both join us now. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Steve, ahead of today's show, we posted on Instagram asking folks to write in with their memories of your forecasts, maybe some well wishes. And we got so many wonderful notes I'll share throughout this show. One person wrote, "Steve has been such an informative and reassuring presence my entire life. He will be missed." Another person wrote, "Steve, you rock. Thanks for your years in service. Deep, deep appreciation and love." What does it feel like to be on the cusp of retirement?
It feels a little strange, actually. It felt a little strange on Sunday to pack up all my materials, put them in the car for the last time, and drive home. I had been looking forward to this a little bit. There are a number of things that I've wanted to do for a while. And as much as I love the weather and will remain involved in it in a peripheral fashion, because I do take cooperative observations at my home in Sutton and have for almost 40 years. And I will continue to do that for the National Weather Service. There are a number of things that, you know, a number of other interests that I do have and a number of other activities that I'm involved in. And I'd like to have more time for them as well. So I approach this new chapter in my life with a mixture of emotions.
Can you give us a little sneak peek of some of those extracurriculars you'll be excited to spend more time on?
Well, I've been interested in gardening for a long time. So I'm going to spend some time with my perennial beds a lot. My longtime partner, Tina Starr, and I have wanted to take some bucket list trips for a number of years. And because of some various factors, we're going to have to move some of those bucket list trips up earlier rather than later. So we're looking forward to doing those. And I'm going to have more time to devote to some community volunteer activities, including being more involved in being a trustee at one of the local high schools in my community.
Hmm. Well, our listeners will surely miss your voice. You have contributed so much to these airwaves over the past 40 years. Megan, as I'm sure you know, these are some big shoes to fill, but you are certainly up for the task and have already dived into your work at the Fairbanks. What's your tenure been like so far?
I have absolutely enjoyed it. It was pretty crazy jumping right into the museum right during the April 8th eclipse. So that was basically my first week. But I had a blast welcoming all of the visitors and getting to watch the eclipse all together and even take meteorological observations during the eclipse. So that was just felt like being welcomed open arms by the community and by the museum itself. And just working with Steve has been absolutely fantastic. I've loved every moment with him and will miss him dearly for sure. Yeah.
Well, we are getting so many messages in, Steve, about your tenure. And you can also call in at 800-639-2211. Paul in Burlington writes, on the occasion of Steve Molesky's retirement, I wanted to share a great memory I have. Before he was a state senator, Phil Baruth was an English professor at UVM, and he occasionally did VPR commentaries and stories. Sometime between 1999 and 2001, he did a piece in which he was convinced that the Eye on the Sky guys weren't just forecasting the weather, but rather they were controlling it. In order to get to the truth and unmask the conspiracy, he decided to travel to the Fairbanks Museum to confront Steve Molesky and Mark Breen. Lo and behold, in an otherwise calm weather day, he encountered localized winds and storms that buffeted him on his journey, seemingly indicating that the theory was true. It was a great story, very creative, and worth rebroadcasting if you can find it. Well, we surely will be looking for that story. Steve, do you remember that?
I do, and I remember there's another column where Baruth was convinced that I was running for vice president as well. And if you can find that, that would certainly be worth a reread on your part, Michaela. I don't know if you want to air that, but it was very, very funny. Baruth was a great writer.
Of course, now he's the state senate president pro tem. So his storied career. I love that. We also got a message from Jonathan in Ripton, who writes, on my way up to experience a breaded puppet performance, I stopped for a meal at the diner in St. Johnsbury, where I ended up getting into a wonderful conversation with Steve. Later that same day, I was pleasantly shocked when one of Bread and Puppet's skits included a parody of Eye on the Sky's Steve Molesky. Years before this, in another conversation with Steve, it was clear to me that he was way ahead of the curve on climate change. You know you have had an impact on Vermont when Bread and Puppet does a sketch about you. That's a wonderful note. We have some calls coming in as well. But first, Megan, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your own background. What got you interested in meteorology?
That is a great question. I feel like a lot of kids are interested in the weather growing up. You always like go out and look at the sky and try to make shapes out of the clouds. And I remember a specific time I had a microburst move through our town when I was really young. And I just wanted to know, how did it happen? Why were the winds like this? Why was there hail? And so that kind of got me just thrust into weather. And I just wanted to know, how did the clouds form? Why did they make shapes? And so just like being in the environment that the weather impacted me day to day, I just wanted to know how it worked. And that sort of jumped me into like looking into it myself and taking some environmental science classes in high school. And that kind of fully pushed me onto the meteorology train.
Steve Molesky, do you also have a memory from childhood, like Megan's, of maybe one particular weather event that made you say, hey, I really want to study this and figure out what's going on?
Absolutely. And I've told this story before, so this may be familiar to some people. Maybe some people haven't heard this. It happened on June 2nd, 1961. It was the first day of summer vacation. And I was sitting down at breakfast. I do remember this. I was probably eating alphabets because that was my favorite cereal at the time. And it probably had about 6 spoonfuls of sugar because I love to eat cereal with like sedimentary deposit of sugar at the bottom of the bowl at that time. Since it was in Maryland, it was a really warm morning, so I was probably wearing pajamas. I was wearing pajamas with shorts and, you know, short sleeves, shorts. I remember that. And being 5 years old, probably had little pictures of animals on it or something like that. But I do remember it was about 8:30, and it began to get dark outside, which is kind of strange at 8:30. So, my mother told me to go out and call our dog inside. Our dog was named Snowflake. She was a white collie. And she had a little saddle of fur right where a horse would have a saddle if you were to ride it. And her head was collie-colored as well. I mean, normal collie-colored. She was a beautiful dog, and I loved her very much. So I ran out to the backyard. And our backyard looked out past our next door neighbor's yard into a big hay field. We were at the very, very far end of a new development that was bordering farmland. And she came running out of that hay field just as a thunderstorm was coming up over the hay field. And I remember looking up at those clouds and thinking first they looked like heads of broccoli, which I really loved broccoli as a kid. I know that's really strange.
Really? That's the most surprising thing I've heard so far.
Well, I like to eat the tops of them because I thought I was eating treetops. Mm. I didn't like the trunks. I just liked the treetops. and then I know it sounds really strange and cheesy, but there was a bolt of lightning that went from one of the cloud tops to another part of the cloud top. So it was kind of cool there. And I remember being fascinated by the color of the cloud because it was this beautiful brushed gray, which I guess you could call pewter gray at this point. And then it was all very exciting. My dog was running across the neighbor's yard and she was beautiful. And you could see how, you know, when a collie is running, the fur is, you know, the hair is kind of flowing and so forth. And she was, and I thought she was beautiful and it was all very exciting. And then I actually heard a voice say, "You will be a weatherman." And being 5 years old, I did not think that this was unusual. I just thought, oh, I'm going to be a weatherman. And so Snowflake was our dog's name, and I went back inside and I announced to my mom, "I'm going to be a weatherman." And she said, "Oh, that's nice." You know, just, you know, when your kid is 5 years old, 1 week you're going to be a weatherman, the next week you're going to be a policeman, the next week you're going to be whatever. But for me, that gave an absolute direction to my life. It was like I'd been shot out of a bow. And it was a shock to me several years later to find out that not everybody had experiences like that. They did not know what they were going to be when they were going to grow up.
Wow.
But that, I was absolutely convinced that I was going to be a weatherman.
Wow.
And
what do you attribute that voice to today?
I really don't know. It was an experience that was I don't want to call it transcendent, but it was just out of the ordinary. And it took me years to actually tell people that I actually had that experience rather than say, "Oh, I looked at the clouds and decided I was going to be a weatherman."
Wow.
But that's actually what happened.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing it with us. And what a unique experience to have, something that brought you wonder and excitement at age five, carry you through all the way to today.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the phones. We have Beth calling in from Windsor. Beth, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hi, Beth. Are you with us?
Yes. My son's now 22, but when he was young, we had like a month of rain, and he said, "Let's call Eye in the Sky and get him to stop it."
All right, that's another vote that Steve and the crew there control the weather. Steve, you're going to have to answer for this.
Yes.
would that I had the power.
I don't know, but he was sitting here at the dining room table and said, "Let's call them and get them to stop the rain."
Oh, I have news. I cashed in all my chips and all my favors for Eclipse Day to give us the sunshine on April. You can tell him that as an adult. So I've got no more favors to call.
You know, well, hopefully there will be no rain on July 15th, I believe it is.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Beth. We got an email from Daryl who writes, I just moved back to Lindenville after 7 years, turned on the radio and heard Steve Molesky was retiring. Living in the NEK most of my life and being interested in the weather, I have many fond memories of listening to Eye on the Sky. In later years, I had the pleasure of meeting Steve when I worked at White's Market. I would special order Virgil's root beer for him, and I remember him liking Moxie as well. Such a pleasant person, and best of luck. Steve, you're clearly very rooted in your community. Megan, your background in meteorology, it's a tough field to study. I heard from our producer that at Plymouth State in New Hampshire, where you studied, there was a 70% dropout rate in the program. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty typical. A lot of people just decide to change their majors. It's not right for them, especially with meteorology. You don't really know if you like it until you try it. And then, of course, doing a lot of calculus and physics, that can also be really difficult for a lot of people and a hard subject to tackle. So that also can make it pretty difficult to stay in meteorology as well.
Hmm. Were there ever any moments where you thought, maybe this isn't for me? Or did your passion kind of push you through all those tougher moments?
Oh, absolutely. My freshman year, I looked at my professor and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm switching my major. I don't like it. And he said, oh, well, stick it out another term. Why don't you apply to this internship? I'll sponsor you. And so I ended up applying from his recommendation and I fell in love with it. So definitely sometimes, it might work out, it might not, but that's kind of a little bit about my story.
Yeah. Well, Steve, what do you remember about your time studying meteorology when you were in school? And I'm particularly interested to hear how the science itself that you were learning back then has changed today.
I had a great time at Linden State College. Much like Megan, it's very heavy on math, physics, chemistry, and so forth, because you're studying atmospheric physics. It's just basically how the atmosphere works. And there's a considerable dropout rate, as it should be, because it's a rigorous field. And when you're a practicing meteorologist, you're making forecasts that influence people's decisions, often life and death. And so you want to make sure that when you're awarded a degree, you're competent in the field. And so that's as it should be. Mm. But I had a great time. And I was very fortunate to have really good professors, including Joseph DeLeo, who went on to help co-found the Weather Channel, which some of you may be familiar with. And I was fortunate enough to go down and work at the Weather Channel at startup for about 2.5 years before coming back up into the Northeast Kingdom, which I love very much. I worked down in Atlanta for 2.5 years, really missed Vermont and the winters especially. Leveraged my experience down there at the Weather Channel to become a better forecaster and come back up here. What I'm interested in hearing more about actually is Megan's intern experience. So Megan, could you give a little bit more information about your intern experience and what that was all about?
You're making my job easy, yeah. Steve.
Of course. So, that summer, I was fortunate enough to join a cohort of 10 women, five who spent the summer at Hobart and William Smith Colleges to study meteorology, and five who spent the summer at Plymouth State. And so both colleges collaborated together with different expertise from the different professors at each school. And I just loved being able to work with these nine other women, like learning science together. It was really awesome. And part of my project was studying this really cool phenomenon that was sort of new at the time, called atmospheric rivers, which is kind of exactly how it sounds. You think of a river flowing on the ground, it's a river flowing up in the sky that moves moisture across the United States. And so I really enjoyed studying those, mostly because of their impacts on things like rainfall and flooding. And so that kind of sprung me into loving research and really enjoying learning about rainfall and things like that. And I ended up studying them for the next 3 or 4 years and writing a few papers about them, which has been a really cool journey, just getting to work with so many different people and getting to learn about science. Like, that was just absolutely amazing, and there was no way I was going back from that.
And what a relevant area of focus to be now working in Vermont, especially since last summer's historic flooding and the continued effects of climate change that I'm sure our region will see in the future. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Frank calling in from South Burlington. Frank, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, you guys, congratulations on the new job, and thank you so much, Steve, for your work. But my question is, when you the science of atmospheric science and the science of meteorology, please explain the differences in the curriculums.
Steve, do you want to take this one?
Well, I think meteorology and atmospheric sciences, they're pretty much the same thing. They just go under two different monikers. Some colleges describe it as atmospheric sciences. Others just say meteorology. I guess if there were a difference, atmospheric science might be a slightly broader label, and you might include things like climatology and related subjects under that broader title than you would meteorology.
Well, thank you for the question, Frank. We got a number of emails throughout today's show, including one from Walt, who writes, "My wife, Karen, loved the time that Steve did a promo for Vermont Public in which he compared the layers of the atmosphere to a sandwich. My memories of Steve include many wonderful weather classes he taught at the museum for my Tunbridge fifth graders. We both have also loved his detailed and articulate, sometimes poetic, weather reports." Thank you, Steve. Steve, what are your favorite memories of teaching kids at the Fairbanks?
Oh my gosh, I have many, but one of my favorite classes that I taught was, or two of my favorite classes that I taught were, one, physics of ice skating, because we had a lot of class activities in that, including lifting weights, sliding across the floor on a little cushion of water. The kids loved that. And also a class on Wilson Bentley, and otherwise known as the Snowflake Man, where we replicated some of his experiments on a small scale in the classroom, including sampling the size of raindrops using salt shakers and pans of flour. Also, with regard to enjoyable things, he mentioned poetic stuff. One of the things that I remember a lot was Aaron Kimball used to throw me a random word of the day when we did live forecasts way back in the day. He used to throw me a word of the day at random, and I'd have to work it into the forecast ad lib extemporaneously. And we used to have a lot of fun with that until one day the word was lubricious.
Oh, my gosh.
And I worked that into the forecast, but the next day I got a little memo from the heads of Vermont Public Radios, basically saying in diplomatese, "We are not amused."
All right, well, we'll have to dig that one up out of the archives as well. That's amazing. Megan, our last email writer, had brought up the classes that Steve has taught at the Fairbanks. I know you also are going to be teaching there as well. What are some of the topics that you're most excited about engaging with the public on?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed teaching the extreme weather class to a variety of different ages. That has been really fun, especially having some students impacted by crazy thunderstorms and tornadoes. They just are so curious about how they work, just like I was when I was that age. And recently we went out and did some excursions out in our new Matzinger Forest area and teaching kids about climate and the environment and amphibians. That has been super fun, talking about vernal pools and collecting newts and the life cycle of newts and frogs and how the weather impacts them. That has been a blast too. I just love watching all of the little students run around and just really engage with their environment. That has been a blast.
Oh, so fun. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have a call from Ken in Wethersfield. Ken, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, while I congratulate Steve on his retiring and Megan on her incoming employment there, I wonder if I could actually propose a task for the next weather report. Here in Wethersfield, we have extreme pine pollen, and it's just collecting this yellow dust over any horizontal surface that stays still for more than about a half hour. And the other day, I noticed it looked like dirt in the air, clouds of dust, and I thought it was fields being plowed until I realized where I was seeing it was at a low level, and there were no fields being plowed in that area. Was I seeing literally clouds of pine pollen in areas and hillsides where there's lots of pine trees and the wind was blowing it off? Is it a meteorological thing down here?
Ken, I love this question because I've also witnessed this in the last week or so. Steve, what are your thoughts?
I would not be surprised if that was the case. I've been actually wiping pollen off my windowsills for the past week or so. Pine pollen is quite large, so it's really easily noticeable as opposed to some of the smaller stuff that might go unnoticed. So I would not be surprised if this is just a really big release of pine pollen that's going on right now.
Has it been particularly windy as well?
It doesn't have to be particularly windy to get a big release of pine pollen and to have it float around, because you look at pine pollen particles and they're not particularly big. They'll carry on the wind very, very easily.
Well, Steve, you have had such a long and fascinating career at the Fairbanks Museum, one that many of us have treasured and followed along with, the highs and some of the challenges that you've faced. A few years back, you were diagnosed with leukemia and faced a very difficult treatment. I'm wondering what it was like to go through that with the kind of broader community that you've cultivated through your work at the Fairbanks and Vermont Public, rooting for you, checking in, hoping for your well-being.
That was extremely moving for me. I cannot adequately express the amount of gratitude that I still feel today, and how fortunate I feel to be part of a community that would express so much support to me absolutely unexpectedly. How much it meant so much to me to receive mail while I was in the hospital, because I was in a room where I was isolated for about 45 days. So the only people that I would see were the nurses that would come in the mail. And so it meant a great, great deal to me to receive that. And it buoyed my spirits immensely.
You're such an important part.
I am forever grateful for that. Inexpressibly so. Thanks for asking.
Thank you for sharing that. And I know it must have been an incredibly difficult time and one difficult to recall as well.
Oh, it's not difficult to recall. It was a hard road to hoe, but it was an experience like any other, and I consider myself extremely lucky to be alive today. Lucky that I had a kidney stone, actually. If it weren't for the fact that I had a kidney stone when I was visiting my sister, they wouldn't have known that I had leukemia until I became symptomatic. And then it would have been too late to do anything about it. And I would not be here today. Hmm. So thank you for kidney stone.
The silver lining.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they took care of that and they took care of a couple other things. And now I'm a much healthier person than I was 5 years ago. So, and the doctor said that, you know, at this point, you know, the chances are like 99.999% that something else will kill me besides leukemia, as it does everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm very grateful to be here.
Well, here's to your continued good health, Steve.
Thank you.
Megan, what have you learned from Steve in the time that you two have overlapped at the Fairbanks?
One thing that I definitely have learned from Steve is just his passion overall for his job and how much he absolutely loves it and cares so much for the community. And just like him talking about, you know, how important our job is as meteorologists to make sure the public understands our forecasts, our information, what we're putting out. And his just passion for all of that has definitely rubbed off on me in these past few months. And not to mention his insane amount of knowledge from working in this position for more than 40 years. There's so many interesting weather phenomena that can happen throughout the state of Vermont due to all the various different terrain and weather patterns that occur here, and just learning piece by piece all of those different little weather patterns that can happen and that can really influence even just one small town has been hugely important during my learning process.
Hmm. A bit of a whimsical question for us mm-hmm. to end mm-hmm. on here. I am curious to hear from both of you. What weather event is the one that most excites you to forecast? And this could be something that happens very often or a very rare event, such as a eclipse, for example. Megan, let's start with you.
Sure. So one thing that really I got into as going to Plymouth State in New Hampshire is learning about ice dams and when those break and the type of weather that occurs before an ice dam in a river breaks and induces flooding downstream. I've always been super interested in that, especially because my school in Plymouth was always impacted whenever that occurred. And just like the buildup of the ice building on the river and how many days that buildup occurs on, and then all of a sudden the snap of rain and warm weather causing that dam to break and impacting so many people. I just find the combination of all the things that have to go perfectly for that to happen really interesting, especially as someone with a background in rainfall and things like that. So I'd say that's definitely one of the most exciting weather events that I would like to forecast.
Oh, well, we will be very thankful for you for telling us about those ahead of time, if and when they do happen. Steve, what about you?
Well, I'm a romantic at heart, and I've been in love with the atmosphere since I was 5 or 6. So I don't know if I have a favorite. Anything dynamic really brings joy to my heart to forecast. So in the summer, it's severe thunderstorms, not because of the damage that they cause, just because of the energy involved. Mm. And, you know, all the dynamism that you see when they're forming and moving across the landscape and so forth. And all the associated weather, the big hail, the strong winds, the tornadoes. One of the most amazing things that I've ever seen in my life was a huge EF4 tornado out by Salinas, Kansas, when I went tornado chasing with Garrett Guisa and my former colleague, the unfortunately late Chris Bouchard, who died so tragically last year in a fishing accident, one of the smartest and most wonderful human beings I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. But that thing passed about 3 miles away from us at a very stately 15 miles per hour. It was one of the most awesome things I have ever seen in my life, in the true sense of the word, awesome. It was just going about its business, and if we'd gotten in its way, we would have been swept away, but it was nothing personal. It was just going about its business. There you go, thing. In the winter, forecasting a great blizzard. I would love that. So those are two things just off the top of my head.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your years of instilling that same awe in the weather and in our natural surroundings in all of us. And congratulations on such a wonderful career.
Thank you, Michaela. It's been a pleasure.
And Megan Duncan, thank you for joining us today as well. And we wish you the very best of luck in your new role.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me today.